Welcome to Geek Actually, episode 61 for the 21st of November 2009. The reason why Dave is laughing is because we put his name in great big animated letters.
Yes!
Just yes. For him on the opening credits.
It's my show now. You can go fuck off.
I actually was saying to Josh, it was too hot, unfortunately, but I was saying to Josh that what I was going to do was redo all the opening credits and have your name as the moving word in the background, and I was going to rename the show Kaziki Actually.
I think that would be awesome.
I know at least one
person who would tune into that religiously. I'd actually have to leave the show just so that I could watch it.
All right, so I am David McVeigh, and I am your host of this very hot show. Now, we haven't had a really hot show in a while. It is 30-odd degrees here in Sydney, and our studio is upstairs of a two-story old house, and it is like a hot box in here.
I'm going to go Roman on you.
It's like 34 or something.
34. It's 35 yesterday. It's going to be 30 degrees for the next couple of days.
Just so you know, that's not Fahrenheit. That's Celsius.
I don't know what that is in American. It's like, you know, I think it's like 3,000 or something.
Yeah,
like
I don't know. You guys can work out your own conversions, but it's hot, and if it's 35 degrees outside, it's probably closer to 40 degrees in this hot box that we call a studio. So we are going to move fairly briskly today so that we don't melt and we can get out of here before the computers blow up.
Not too briskly.
All right. So coming up today, before we go any further, I think we really need to specify for those who are listening to the audio podcast only and wondering what we're talking about with credits and so forth, we do go out live. Now, we are changing the time of the show. So for those who are in the chat room who come and see us religiously and for those who would like to come and watch the show, as of next week, the show will be going out at 12 p.m. On Saturday. So it's 1 hour later. So we're just moving the show 1 hour later, which means, of course, it will probably go out about 12:30. Mm. No. Let's see with the new time whether we can actually stick to it. No,
and I'll turn up more hungover than I usually am.
The reason why we're moving the time is because the United States listeners with daylight savings all got pushed forward an hour. So if we go forward an hour, it all goes back to where it was. So also, let's face it, getting up early on a Saturday morning sucks. All right, so we're going to move the show to 12, which is UTC plus 11 Australia. Eastern Daylight Savings Time, which will work out to about 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern for the United States listeners. And on today's show, you guys are not correcting me. See, we're so hot, you guys aren't correcting me. Do you want me to introduce you or not?
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Okay.
I don't care.
All right, joining me in the studio as usual on this very hot day is Josh Philpott. How are you?
It's hot. It's hot. Really hot. It's all I can think of now.
My fingers are damp. I'm putting sweat on the keyboard.
We closed the windows and the doors like 5 minutes ago, and it's already hot. Fucking sauna in here.
So it's not helped by the fact that we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 PCs all generating heat.
Mm-hmm. And my crotch.
And that of course has got to be Dave Kaziki. How are you?
I'd like to thank Brad for saying that I look like Seth Rogen. I get that a lot when I'm clean shaven, which I'm still trying to work out whether that's a compliment.
Wait a minute, would that be Brad from Movie
Fan House?
That was awesome.
From the Movie Fan House podcast, which can be found at moviefanhouse.com, although I believe the site is down at the moment, but it will be back up there redesigning.
And you should join their Facebook page.
And they've got a fan of
Brad's... But you know what? Fuck Charlie. Just Brad's Movie Warehouse. That's right. It's a new one. Did I even see Charlie in the chat room today? No.
Charlie actually did say that he might pop in because he heard we were doing 2012, which is our film review today, and said he might pop in.
Well, if he pops in, then I'll take back everything I said. Fuck you, Charlie.
Because Brad from Movie Fan House is in the chat room, I think we should just give him one more push.
Wow.
And say that's Brad and Charlie at the Movie Fan House podcast, which can be found at moviefanhouse.com or search for it on iTunes. And I'm very glad you joined us, Brad. And he's laughing in the chat room. Yes.
And just to let Brad know, I finished Modern Warfare yesterday, so Spec Ops, man.
Cool. And just let Brad know as well, quickly, while we're doing our shout-outs. Brad, I'm about to get a network cable for my new system in my room, which means that you and me are going to be playing some Borderlands or Modern Warfare. So,
yeah, hang on, network cable, why can't you go wireless? I thought the PS3 had super wireless.
Oh, wait, no, we're talking about Xbox. And wait, that's right.
Oh, that's right.
I am not paying $150 for a wireless connection.
See, I actually have to, because my Xbox is downstairs.
I do not pay $150 on anything unless I drop a load somewhere along the way. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, I'm feeling frisky this
it's
morning.
It's too hot for that kind of talk.
It's never too hot for that kind of talk, or too early. Anyway.
On today's show, let's move this along briskly because we've got to get out of this hot box. On today's show, along with the games and the tech and the entertainment that we always talk about, we're going to review Roland Emmerich's new epic destruction film, 2012. I thought instead of doing a retro review today, what we do is we'll have a look over some of his past films. And we'll try and figure out what the hell happened to Roland Emmerich along the way, okay? So
I think he's evolved quite well.
Devolved is more the word you're looking for. All right, we're also going to look at a couple of trailers here. I actually had lined up Percy Jackson and The Lightning Thief, which is kind of intriguing considering what we talked about last week. We'll come back to that. And Dave has found somebody threw up on YouTube, and we thought we'd throw up on YouTube. That's kind of messy. But somebody threw up on YouTube, and we thought before it gets taken down, we should have a look at this. Somebody's thrown up a teaser for Stallone's new film, The Expendables. So we thought we'd have a look at that as well and have a chat about that and see where he's headed. But first, in a little section that we like to call Go Us, we have an iTunes review. This was on the Australian store, and it's from the Sandgate Pimp, who actually is a regular in the podcast chat room. So thank you very much for the Sandgate Pimp. He actually writes, and I really love this. I really love this, actually. He says, now, I just have to state in advance that I'm actually adding some punctuation here because it's very badly written. Okay, but his intent was very good, but I actually have to re-punctuate.
I think this is a really cool review.
It's a really cool review, and he actually says, I didn't know geeks were this funny. What happens when you get a bunch of guys who know what they're talking about? A great show. When podcasting seemed to be a way for bad actors and people who can't sell their TV shows anymore, finally there's hope. This is what the podcast is all about. Recommend to anyone. Oh, they do swear a bit, but then again, who doesn't?
And by they, you mean me.
Well, actually, I think we all swear a little bit on this show. You take it to new levels sometimes, but that's a whole different issue.
And I still hold back.
All right, so we're going to move straight into some game news this morning, because
I love an actor
that I absolutely love, who's on screen right now. This is Kevin McKidd, who's a Scottish actor.
Brutal.
He should have been Bond. That's all I'm going to say.
Now, Kevin McKidd, for those who are wondering why his face is so familiar, he was the star of the series HBO series Rome.
Yes.
He was also we retro reviewed Dog Soldiers last week.
Yeah.
He was the star of Dog Soldiers as well.
And for the geeks, he's also like we are saying in our next
McTavish.
Call of Duty. He has an Martin absolutely Warfare brilliant too. Line in the thing where he goes, I hate dogs. And I was just oh my god.
Now, the reason why this comes up is because, and funny you guys bring up Modern Warfare, because there is now talk that the Modern Warfare movie may be a go, and that he might be reprising the role of Soap McTavish in the film.
If he does, so I will fucking watch
I would
this
really
movie.
Be interested in what their idea for this is. Are they planning to run with... Like, I mean, because we've talked about this sort of thing before with Uncharted and so on and so forth. For anyone that has played these games before, it is a heart-wrenching fucking drive, and it is as cinematic as any movie you will ever see. And that's the reason they sell
too,
so well.
And it's great, too, because there's no plot.
Well,
oh come on!
No, I completely disagree.
Fucked. I was playing it last night, and you know what? I don't think there's enough drugs in the world to make that plot make sense to
me.
No,
I completely disagree, man. And
save
this is,
it for platforms.
Yeah. No. All right. Well, we'll save that one for
save
the
that for platforms.
Don't get me wrong. I loved every minute of it.
Save that for platforms because what I'm going to give you here is a quote from McKidd himself, who actually says, they were looking for a rough Scottish actor in Hollywood that probably couldn't. They probably couldn't get Gerard Butler, so they got the number two Gerard Butler, me.
Yes,
because I had no idea it would be so huge, and now there are talks of a feature film. He says, then came the kicker when he was asked to bring if he would be bringing soap to life in the movie. He said, if the script is good and Gerard isn't available, then absolutely.
Yeah. I'd like to see Gerard Butler with a mohawk.
No one fits it better than him. We've seen him play military, so we know he can do it. I mean, in Dog Soldiers, he was perfectly fine for the role.
And in Rome, he's military as well.
He is. He's a centurion.
Exactly. Like, the guy's tough as fucking now. And, you know, like, he may not look much like soap, but I'm willing to let that go.
Fuck, I'll suspend disbelief, man. That voice is... Where do you... I remember... I'm not going to get too much into the gaming stuff, but for anyone who doesn't know, in Modern Warfare, you've got, like, Lance Hendrickson, Keith David, and Kevin McKidd all voicing out characters that you play or around you, and it's just like... an absolute wet dream, having all of these awesome voices like, go and do this. Yes, fucking sir, I'm going to do that. Whatever you need. What, kill that kid and stomp on that puppy? Sure, let's go.
I just want to point out that Brad has said in the right light, Dave, you look like Seth Rogen.
I know. Clean shaven, I'll make sure I wear the Super Jew t-shirt.
But that's
next
okay,
because
Brad actually looks like John Cusack, so maybe we could like do some sort of fan film going here.
We should start a team up, man. We can do a retrospective.
How about
you can
no?
do all of John Cusack's awesome films like Gross Point Blank, and that's it. And I can do Seth Rogen, which is.
Let's not go there. Anyway, I want to find out more about this next one. Talk to me, dude.
Which one would you be talking about? Would you be talking about the kid?
The one before that.
Oh, the one before that. Okay. I've got the article here.
Can I just say that after playing this game four times and you know, sort of knowing that it's not even out yet, it's not that good. So why are we making a movie out of it?
I know. I love THQ, but I saw some footage for it a while ago, and I was just like...
It's like Rocketeer
really?
Meets Independence Day, but not badly.
Yeah, none of it is in the good way. I mean, from what I've heard, sorry to stomp on Dave's feet, but as far as I know, wasn't it Brad Pitt's production company has bought the rights to Dark Void?
That's what I've got right here. According to this article, it says Capcom... I was a bit confused by this because they're saying Capcom's upcoming Dark Void. So the game hasn't been released.
No, it hasn't come out yet.
Okay, so, excuse me. So what they're basically saying is that the film rights for Dark Void may have actually been picked up already before the film's even come out as a vehicle for Brad Pitt.
Mm.
Whether or not it will happen, I mean, let's face it, Brad Pitt's had a lot of films that have kind of come and gone and never really started. Let's face it, he was originally supposed to be in The Fountain. They came here, they actually got everything set up for it, and then him and Jennifer pulled out of it.
But I hope they do it, and it's like Rocketeer 2.
They're saying the similarities are very similar to Rocketeer. Actually, if you go to the article on... where did I grab this from? This was from Slash Film. If you go to Slash Film and have a look for the Capcom upcoming Dark Void, they've actually got a video embedded, which is some gameplay video from the game. And it literally has the guy running off the edge and his jetpacks kick off and he flies into the air and so forth. And, you know, cinematically, it would make a very interesting film, I think. But I don't know enough about it to really get into detail on it. All I know is that...
The game's just very generic. I have no problem with the visual style of it, and there are some cool things.
It looks a little bit stilted and stunted to me at times. It doesn't run that smoothly. Yeah. But then again, it is earlier code, so...
Yeah, well, we'll see.
According to the article on Slash Film, which you can find at slashfilm.com, it says, I'm not all that surprised to read The Dark Void, the upcoming video game from Capcom, will be adapted into a feature film. The first time I played the game at Capcom's editor's day in early 2008, the game's filming influences were obvious. There's a large dollop of the Rocketeer in there, as well as some Buck Rogers, and a general sensibility inherited from the 40s adventure films and serials. A movie almost had to happen. Now the first steps have been taken. So I guess we'll wait and see what actually happens with that. So the one I liked even more than that, though, was this one, which is actually...
this is very exciting, I have to say.
I just thought this was very funny. Apparently, some parents... took the Xbox away from a 15-year-old in America. He had been bad, and they took the Xbox away. So the kid called 911.
Cruel and unusual punishment.
No, he actually called 911 to find out whether his parents were legally allowed to take his Xbox away, but he hung up on them. Because I guess he got embarrassed at the last minute. But the police in that town have a motto, and the motto of the police in that town is dedicated to making our community a better place to live and work. So the police took it upon themselves to go visit anyway. And so they actually went around to the house and sat down with the 15-year-old to find out what the story was, and they actually said, no, actually, they do have all rights to take away your Xbox.
And then they charged him with making a false claim, and he had to sell his Xbox to pay the fine.
Interestingly enough, like, I mean, I was just more curious from the point of view of, did he own the Xbox? Because that would have been where it would have got interesting.
You know what? As a 15-year-old?
Yeah.
Everything that he owns, his parents own, so...
No.
Yeah, because he's not legally of age yet. He doesn't actually own the Xbox. They would have bought it for him.
You don't know that? What if he has a job?
I guarantee they bought it for
him. I bought my first PlayStation, thank you very much, on my own money.
He says here, we have no record, by the way, as to why the parents actually took it away.
I think it'd be a bit embarrassing if the story went live and it was like, such and such, Mick, such and such from this town lost his Xbox because he was being naughty and didn't do his homework. I think no one's really going to let that get that far.
So
I hope not.
It's a puff piece, but you know what? It's hot.
I just think that is pretty funny though. What would have made that story so much better for me is if the kid had got his Xbox back, because that would have just swept the nation and every kid
and every
that
parent
ever had anything.
It would have set precedent for parents everywhere to basically have no control over their children.
No, I wouldn't. What would take it over the edge for me is if they actually played the 911 call. Please state the nature of the emergency. They took it! They took my fucking Xbox! They stole it! They're still at home! You can get it! Here's my address. I was like, what the fuck?
All right, you guys got any more games, or can I move on? Because
last time
I moved on, and you guys went, "God, we got stuff."
No, it doesn't happen. We just like to keep you on your toes.
Okay,
so but if you do want more gaming news, come and check out Platforms 8 p.m. on Monday.
I was about to do that. I actually have it in my notes. It says here for more details on game news, for more news on game news and opinions, check out Platforms.
Yeah,
actually, that's what we need to have. We need to have an ad
for Platforms. Wouldn't that be nice?
There you go.
Instead, we got an ad for everyone else.
Instead, we have an ad for. We have an ad for Real Junkies, which you can catch at weekendronin.com or on iTunes. And you can, these boys are really, really good. They sit around and they plugged us again this week, so this is why I'm doing it. Right.
And I'd like to say thank you, because they gave a shout out to me, I believe, last week on their show, because one of their members had been mugged, as I was mugged a few weeks ago. So we got a little thing going
yes,
on
actually,
there.
Actually, so. Fox had said that earlier in the year he had been mugged as well. And
so, yeah, look, thanks for that, Fox. It is appreciated, and I hope that they have cancerous boils on their testicles from now on.
I'd also like to say to Fox at Real Junkies, we'll just bring this out up here right here. This is Real Junkies Podcast. You can find it at weekendronin.com, or you can search for it on iTunes. But I will say to Fox that, yes, you have called us out. I did get that message from you. And next week, we are doing the Mega Twilight Show.
Fuck you, Fox.
And next week we will be doing New Moon.
I have to watch two terrible films in 1 week.
Well, you know what?
I'm not even going to say that because it'll wreck the review for later. But let's just say I've already had a bad couple of weeks for movies. Do you
yeah,
really
you know what
have
makes
to
it
do?
Worse is because we're doing fucking New Moon next. Sorry, because we're doing the awesome. I'm predicting it will be fantastic. New Moon next week. It means that now I have to go out and watch Twilight.
That's what we're saying. We've got two movies we have to watch next
Luckily,
week.
Luckily, I can actually say I've already seen Twilight.
You're still going to watch it again.
Yeah,
I know
yeah,
you.
I
you
am.
Have to
and,
do it.
And just to
research.
Let everyone know that Josh and I, when we buy tickets next
no,
week,
Dada
we're
Mike.
Going to be holding
Josh,
hands
Josh,
and we're
back,
going to be sitting there.
Like a bit.
We're going to sit there and be like, oh my God, give me two tickets to New Moon. It's going to be great. Woo, let's go watch it.
We'll dress up like emo kids. It'll be fantastic.
Yeah.
Hey, Charlie.
Oh, shit. Brad, don't tell Charlie any of the shit I said before.
Yeah. I just want to say, Dada Mike, there are certain movies you can prejudge. Okay, and I'm just going to go out on a limb and just say that I'm going to stick to my guns on this one.
Now, I also think, yeah, but I'm with Josh. There are some movies you can prejudge, and in particular, we can prejudge this one because we have background. This
and
is the
awesome.
Sequel to
I,
a
I,
film.
I don't need background.
No, but I'm saying,
I've seen trailers.
We can prejudge it because we've got background. I've seen Twilight. I know what I'm coming into. You know?
And we are professional movie reviewers here.
That's right.
At Geek, actually. And to be honest, Adam, Mike, no disrespect, but... the demographic for that is 12 to 14 and having
female.
A vagina. And considering none of us do, well, Josh sometimes does, but for the majority of the time, none of us
Look,
do.
Look, we said it on our review for Twilight many, 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 many months ago when I did it with Maren. And we were saying that, you know, quite frankly, when we saw Twilight, we sat next to a 15-year-old girl. Maren and I laughed our asses off throughout the film. And then when the film was over, we looked over and she's in tears. And we talked to her. We actually had a chat with her afterwards. And we were saying, was it what you were expecting? She goes, oh, it was beautiful. It was wonderful. It was this and that. It's like, that's that's who it's aimed at. You know?
No. That's who the next generation is. This is what's wrong with society. That doesn't make it right. I'm not giving her that.
I don't care. We will come back to more New Moon next week.
My sister's young, and she doesn't like that film.
Actually, I was going to save this for the movie section, but we've kind of gone into New Moon already. I'm going to play you guys a little video. I'd like you to have a little look at this.
I'm a werewolf. I'm going to take my shirt off.
This was from the Conan O'Brien show this week. Conan has this to say about New Moon.
Speaking of Moon, I have to mention this. Everybody's talking about New Moon, the second Twilight vampire movie. Ladies. it's a movie primarily aimed at young, impressionable girls, but sorry. I think it's my duty to warn parents. I saw the movie. The movie may be a little too risque. Yeah. I saw a screening of Twilight New Moon. I was shocked at some of the themes they explore in this film. Specifically, I hate to let you down. I'm just talking about the family of the werewolf boys. There's a whole family of werewolf boys, and I think their scenes just may be a little too sexy. Take a look.
Both of you calm down.
Nothing. He tells me nothing because he's scared of you.
Oh, don't.
All right, so that was from Conan. So Jesus. This is what we've got to look forward to next week, boys.
That bit at the end, like, that's like something out of Fight Club. Like, that's like dropping the dick in the movie scene. Like, I mean, like, I just dropped it and I'm like, wait, what? What just happened? His face came back up. I actually registered what I just saw.
Cut it short because that they laugh and he stands there with that dead expression on his face for like a minute. for those in the audio room, what we had was humping dogs. So,
and that 3-second excerpt is already more entertaining than that whole film would be, I'm predicting.
Absolutely. So, well, you know what? As Dave said, we are professionals here. We're going to bite the bullet, and we are going to see this.
And I will judge it completely fairly, and I mean that. As much as I brutally attack this movie straight up, it's because I am such a fan of all the concepts that they're putting behind.
I know you like men with their shirts off.
Cute. This is like the video game movies for me. Like, this is taking something I love and then dressing it up with an emo shirt. I mean, like, this is like vampires and werewolves, and that's why I'm angry. I will remove that from this movie and go see this movie, but I warn people that if there's anything wrong with this movie, I will attack it.
Charlie has actually said that he doesn't wish that bullet on anybody.
That's a good line. I like
it. It's like diving on a frag grenade that you know is going to go off in your genitals.
I'm going to call out Charlie and Brad and say, why aren't they reviewing New Moon? On themoviefanhouse.com.
Oh, shit.
It's not a very
professional website. Podcast.
I know it's only the biggest. It's only going to be one of the biggest movies of the year.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm surprised that themoviefanhouse.com.
That's movie fan house
That's movie fan house.
Charlie's just said that he has to wash his hair. There you go.
That's themoviefanhouse.com.
Oh, look at this! They're going to a film festival. I'm sure you guys could duck out of the film festival for 2 hours. Go and see New Moon. I'm calling you out, man.
Just for our audio listeners, Brad and Charlie, who are the hosts of the Movie Fan House, are actually in our chat room right now. And we're calling them out and saying, if we have to do New Moon, Real Junkies, I believe, is doing New Moon.
Hey, you don't have to do it this week, man. I'll take next week.
Yeah.
Come on, guys. I'm going there with like 3 bath bags, which I intend to fill.
and about half a bottle of vodka.
Yeah, because the other half will be drunk on the way. Fuck, I'm buying tickets to New Moon.
Yeah. What am I doing? He'll be standing at the counter and be like, I'll get two tickets. Hold on.
The thing that I'm looking forward to the most is you've seen all of us, right? I can say that Dave and I will by far be the two oldest people. Yes. At that fucking show. And I can just bet there'll be all three of us walking up to the counter and there'll be like a 13-year-old chick and we'll be like, give me three tickets to Twilight. It's going to be awesome. Woo! Come and see
I've just got this shot in my mind of you guys because you're not exactly short either. And I just imagine you surrounded by all these like 13-year-old girls. And there's just like a sea of 13-year-olds.
Don't put
and
that
these
image
two heads popping out over the top, you and Dave. Oh, God, this is going to be...
Wait, he said a sea of 13-year-olds and then these two heads sticking up, you and Dave. And Josh.
No. I'm outside of the bin chucking up.
All right, let's move into the Great Tech War of 2009. All right, so what are we talking about in Tech War, Josh? We're talking about AT&T and Verizon again.
Woo!
What a surprise! Woohoo! Yeah. Okay, now, just to remind people, Verizon have been on the attack against AT&T's 3G network. And once again, I will state, this has no relevance to the Australians whatsoever, but it is relevant to the greater scheme of the tech war, because this kind of advertising is what you get. This is Verizon's latest ad, and we always do like the Verizon, we've got a map for that ad. So here's the Verizon's latest effort.
I'll have a blue Christmas without you. I'll be so blue.
Want 3G web browsing in more places? There's a map for that. With 5 times more 3G coverage than AT&T, Verizon Wireless is your destination for great gifts like the Samsung Robe. Plus the
okie dokie. So, that was their latest ad. It has a man walking along. He can't get internet connection, and the little blue map keeps popping up saying his AT&T sucks. And when he gets home, of course, there's a little package there from his son for a Christmas present, and the map pops up, and it's a Verizon phone inside the box, and he's going to have wonderful coverage from this point onwards. Now, this court case started this week. AT&T has taken Verizon to court, basically asking for an injunction to remove these ads from television because they're losing money on it. The first round in this... Ding, ding, first round, Verizon. The judge basically said, no. And so, in AT&T style, they decided to fight back. So, here's AT&T's ad.
Who offers the best 3G experience? Let's compare. Who has the nation's fastest 3G network? AT&T. Which network lets you talk and surf the web at the same time? AT&T. The most popular smartphones? Access to over 100,000 apps? Name that starts with the letter V. Hey, they got one.
When you compare, there's no comparison. AT&T. A better 3G.
Really? A magnetic board and little crosses?
They broke the bank with the budget on that.
Dude, like, I just love it. Out of anyone they could have chosen to do that ad, they got Luke Wilson. It's like, no one's even going to know who that is. They're just going to look at it and be like, hey, that guy looks familiar. Doesn't he have a brother that's famous?
Yes, star of such cinema masterpieces as Bottle Rocket and the Darjeeling Express, really.
and Charlie's Angels.
Look, I mean, in all honesty,
was
man...
Was he the star?
in all honesty, man, I don't hate Luke Wilson at all, but it's just like I look at that ad and I'm just like, what the hell?
But it's also, I mean, we look at that rash of Verizon
ads. Well, is the other thing that I'm going to bring up. It's like the message, like, who's got the fastest 3G network? It's like... Yeah, but if you can only use it in 4 places,
right.
No one fucking cares.
Your 3G network may be faster, but you can only get it if you live in Albuquerque. So that's the latest.
I like Brad's comment. Good to see Luke Wilkerson can still get one.
Do we really believe that Luke Wilson is that invested? And do you really
No.
think...
Yeah. Invested. I'm sure he's invested in the paycheck. Yeah. Oh, Charlie, a couple of $100,000. Yeah, it sounds great for us.
Oh, Charlie says, bro, it's all over the TV over here. That doesn't make it good.
Yeah. Dude, I absolutely adore the fact that, like, the other thing that I love is get a bit of fucking whiteboard. You can't even stick the bottom one on, man. I mean, like, what the hell? What's the budget behind this fucking thing?
I actually think that was subtle. I think they were supposed
to be. Oh, wow, man. Really? I didn't get that. No, man, I totally missed that one.
Oh, it's crap.
So you're saying there's a subtext to the whole
They're trying. They're really trying.
I must have missed that.
can't wait for my Supergirl friend part two.
Oh, Dad, I watched.
You went there.
I saw that at the cinema.
Fuck me too.
Yeah, no, that was ordinary. That was a really ordinary film. All right,
but they did nail what chicks are like.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, go on. Look, there he goes again.
All right, so.
That's what I'm here for.
No, actually, before we go on, just very quickly, we're not even going to cover the article in much detail. Just to let you know, Josh, that we kind of called it a few weeks ago when we said that when Skype was up for sale, we said Google's going to buy this because Google wants to take over this. They didn't, and that conglomerate got it. There's an article in the paper today that said Google has just bought its own VoIP technology, so they're going to try and take on Skype at its own fight. Now, I think it'll be very interesting. We're not going to cover the story this week, of course, but I think we will keep our eye on that because I think that will come feature heavily in the coming weeks because, I think when Google wants to take on Skype, that's going to be an issue all to itself. Let's move ourselves into tech proper. Now, can I just tell you that Microsoft really needs to stop trying to be Apple? They don't do it very well.
I'm just going to go on a limb and say that they should just stop trying to be really sort of friendly, okay?
Microsoft people aren't friendly.
Microsoft people aren't friendly. I'm just going to ignore that comment entirely.
I actually missed it, so I'm glad.
Yeah. Stop, Microsoft. Stop.
Yeah. It's just like you guys are you're the business and you're the tech nerds. You're the people that don't get friendly and nice. Stop trying to steal Apple's market and do better at keeping your own.
Do better at what you do rather than do badly what other people do. The reason why I bring this up is
but what they do good is doing badly.
Well, yeah, we can argue this. All right. This is actually not on the show notes, but I'm going to bring it up because Dave said that. I think it's fair that we bring this up. That story's done. Now, where is it? There is actually one here. No, that's the assault. Where is it, Josh? I had that article before. Anyway, basically, an article has come out this week, and we didn't put it on the show notes because it was kind of a secondary.
Is that it there behind your PC? Maybe.
A secondary article. Oh, yes, that's it. Thank you. Hey, there we go.
All right. We're so professional here at Geek, actually.
Now, it was
too hot to be professional.
It's too hot to be professional.
That is true.
We actually put that over there because we weren't going to cover it, but you just said that, so I thought it would be fair. I play devil's advocate. I am a Mac user. I also have PCs. I think you have to take everything for what it does, and it does well. And I have to say at this point that a reliability study came out this week that actually talked about laptops. And Apple actually, who everybody always talks about how their laptops are the best on the market. Well, in the reliability study that actually came out by SquareTrade, it was based on 30,000 individual laptop units. And they found that Apple actually comes in number four behind Asus, Toshiba, and Sony. But they do beat Acer, Gateway, and HP for failure rates. I was very, very fascinated to find out that Asus was number one. Because you don't think of Asus as being number one. I would have thought.
I honestly do, man. Because,
see, I would have thought Sony, Toshiba, but not Asus.
No, man. They started as a parts company. They built from the inside out.
So, yeah.
No, I have an HP, and I am currently having problems with it. So
yeah,
I know that.
and you notice that they didn't even bother to cover Compaq. I don't know if that's because it's owned by HP, but they still release as two separate brands. Mm-hmm. But they don't even cover Compaq. So I don't even know where Compaq fell. And you can only think that if HP is way low, Compaq's probably way lower. But anyway, so it's very interesting to see that Apple isn't as reliable as a lot of people were saying.
I did my own survey of houses that I live in, and it had 100% success rate.
One computer, right?
That's right. That's right. 100% success rate for laptops.
All right, back to Microsoft. Now, we reviewed a film a couple of weeks ago called Zombieland. And I think this might be the sequel. This might be the dancing zombie version. I'm going to play some video. We're going to keep the mics open and we're going to talk about it because it's long and we don't want to play the whole thing. But basically what the story is, that at the Microsoft Store, you know how they've got their own Apple clone stores now called Microsoft Stores? Apparently, for no apparent reason, I guess they were trying to do like a flash mob type thing, all of the employees of the Microsoft Store decided to dance. And they started to do this.
I don't think the employees decided to dance. I think somebody above them went, hey, guess what? We're going to dance.
So they did kind of a flash mob thing in the middle of the store. Everybody started to do this dance. Now, I want you to watch this video. Here's the video here. We're going to bring the audio down on the video so we can talk about it. You look... the thing that gets me about this video more than anything else is that the customers aren't interested at all, and the employees look so bored at all of this. It's just embarrassing.
Don't you traditionally flash mob something outdoors?
Yeah, it's just, and the thing is, it's not even this sudden spontaneous thing. It goes on forever.
I love this dude in the front that's just like, oh, God.
Now, if you go to fakestevejobs.net, you can actually find this video. It's embedded in there. I do suggest you go have a look at it, because it is just embarrassing. It really is. So this is the Microsoft's...
Holy Mother of God.
This is Microsoft's answer to the spontaneity of an Apple store. There's no energy. It really is...
Can I tell you now that these dancers run as well as Windows?
Anyway, we'll leave that video there, because I don't really think I can watch any more of that. It really... I've seen it a couple times.
I ate before the show. I'm having trouble keeping it down.
So that was not good. Anyway, where the hell's my show notes going again? God, it's hot. All right, so we've got Microsoft Gold Dancers. We've got Microsoft, though, does have good news this week, which is that it actually has gained on Google. It is now up to 10.
Brad's comment, everyone's so white.
People are so white.
Yeah, nice call, dude, nice call.
All right, so where was I? Where was I? Oh, yeah, 10% of market share. Thank you. Come back. The heat. Oh, I feel faint. Bing search engine has gained market share on Google, and they're so proud to announce that they now have 10% market share. I'm sorry, that's not gaining on anybody. You know what? I think what's good for the goose is good for the gander. If Microsoft is going to say that they are gaining on Google by saying that they have 10%, they have to acknowledge that Apple is gaining on them at their 12% or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for some like tiny, tiny performer to come out there. Yeah, we're gaining on you. We got like 0.000001375%.
And quite frankly, I think with the exception of one last thing in tech, we're going to move into film and television for the rest of the show. Woo-hoo. But the one last thing in film and tech that I think we're going to raise is the fact that the dictionary has got its word of the year. This is the new Oxford American Dictionary, has now claimed that the word unfriend, the Facebook term, unfriend, is their word of the year. Oh. Is it really? Really? Is that the best we can do?
Unfriend. Well, it means that a lot of people are being antisocial around the world, which is cool. You know, like that makes
a lot
of sense.
And so next year we're going to have unfollow. Is that the idea?
Yeah. Un-Facebook.
Un-Facebook.
So really, I still want the dislike. That's what I'm waiting for. I want to be able to dislike.
No,
things
I don't. I don't
say.
Want that. I want hate.
Hate.
or you know, something subtle, because you know I'm all about subtle. Something like, you know, skull fuck button or something like that. You know, just something out. You know,
I'm sure there'll be an app soon enough.
I don't think dislike is because you know there are some things that you vehemently I hate. It's just like destroy. Or, you know.
I'd like to point out the previous words of the year have included carbon neutral. Isn't that two words?
Woo!
Carbon.
Apparently it's one now. Don't fuck with the dictionary,
it's
man.
It's a hyphen somewhere.
Here's a word I don't even know. Somebody in the chat room can help me out, maybe. Locavore? What's a locavore?
I believe that it's an animal that only eats trains.
And hyper-milling. That was nice. I like that. Okay, anyway, so that's bullshit. All right, let's get into entertainment news. I've got videos to show.
Pardon me.
Oh, God.
Okie dokie. So first up here, we're going to show a trailer for a new film. Now, this is a film that I had actually not heard of at all. And I caught a teaser trailer for it, funnily enough, about 3 weeks ago. And I thought, oh, that looks intriguing. And then suddenly we have this trailer come out. Now, it's a film called Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief. And it's directed by Chris Columbus, who directed the first two Harry Potter films.
And Discovered America,
apparently. And, you know, I thought it was interesting to have a look at this trailer because in light of the fact that we are getting Clash of the Titans soon, this is also another Titan-esque film, although this one is set in modern day. But it's still...
Titans will clash.
Titans will clash. So here's a little bit of Percy Jackson. Well, actually, here's a lot of Percy Jackson. And we'll have a chat about this when we're finished.
And he's alive.
How long was that?
7 minutes.
7 minutes?
That's crazy, man. How do you do it?
I don't know. I just like being water.
There are 12 Olympian gods. Big three are the brothers Zeus, Poseidon, and Hades. The children of these gods were half human, half gods.
Percy Jackson, we need to talk.
You can't deceive me!
Miss Dodds?
Whoa! I found him.
Wait, who found me?
We've been expecting you.
All demigods have inherited skills. You have to follow your instinct. Take this to defend yourself. It's a powerful weapon.
This is a pen.
Only use it in times of severe distress.
This is a pen.
Click it!
Possibly worst line in movie history. Sneak a peek. What?
Oh, come on, nothing beats that. Titans will clash.
I had to say that.
I'm sorry. Hell. I'm with Charlie on that. Sorry, guys, it was a bit loud. Pierce Brosnan really has let himself go. I really could not. I just looked at that and I was like, wow.
Look, I gotta say though, as that trailer goes, I look at that and I go, I would rather see that at this point than Clash of the Titans.
So, I totally agree. Look,
I mean, disagree.
I mean, I like you, Dave, actually enjoy the Harry Potter films. Ooh. and I'm all for them trying to start a new series, and it's nice to see it not being.
And I noticed that Brad basically said, was it Brad or Charlie, who said that those, no, Brad said it, that those are kids' books, pretty big, but nothing like Harry Potter. But let's remember that being a kid's book is not relevant here, because Harry Potter was a kid's book. Mm. And they turned it into what Harry Potter became. Yeah. You know, so we can look at it and go, I like the tone of it. I like what it's trying to do. I'm a little worried about the modern day, you know, trying to bring the mythology into the modern day.
I can guarantee you from that trailer there will be a line in that movie that is something along the lines of, the pen is mightier than the sword.
Oh, I'll bet you. It's going to be full of all sorts of tacky shit like that.
Look, I mean, it's basic kids. We have to remember that. And I mean, for what I saw, I mean, there were some terrible lines. But look, it looks that big budget kind of Harry Potter feel. It looks... Oh, it's Chris, intriguing.
Look, it's Chris Columbus. He's probably plowed $100 million into this film. The guy's got clout, you know? So he's probably plowed $100 million into it. We're going to see lots of special effects. It will be a fun ride. I don't know what it's going to be like. And I think it's really odd that this film has kind of come along very quietly.
It never bodes well when a film just appears out of nowhere. Yeah, but I mean, that's just my gut feeling. Occasionally you do get surprised. Yeah. And you do get...
District 9.
Know, well, yeah, I mean, you know, these things do happen, but I mean, a lot of the time, it doesn't really matter which industry you're in. If something just appears out of nowhere, most of the time, it's going to be a piece of shit. I don't care. It's got special effects in it. I'll go and see it.
Yeah, I will do. Well. All right. Now, I'd just like to bring up probably the biggest spoiler of the year. Now, we're going to review this film in a minute, so we'll come back to it. But just there was an article in Slash Film that basically said that Roland Emmerich is developing a 2012 sequel. Called 2013, but it's going to be a TV series. Now, all I can say about this is forget the article, forget everything about it, but 2012 is supposed to be about the world ending, and if you're planning a sequel, doesn't that kind of spoil the fact that the world doesn't end.
No, it doesn't, because that's 2012. The world ends. 2013, everything's okay. We're back to normal.
We're back. We're normal.
So I just thought, I just saw that article. I just went, spoiler? It's like, I think I would have let the film run its course and then announced the TV series. I don't think I would have announced the TV series on the release of the film. All right.
I think they should re-release The Sixth Sense and just call it Bruce Willis is Dead, because, you know, it's something smooth like that. You know, we can just do.
Oh, it's pretty awesome, I have to say.
I see there's some note about me in the show notes coming next.
Yes,
I'm excited.
Oh God!
And now, I don't know if you have seen.
I couldn't remember whether he has seen this.
I don't know if you've seen
this.
But if not,
I think it'll give a lull for everyone in the chat.
This is Mr. Tim Burton. Okay, I'm bringing his picture up on screen for the audio podcasters. Mr. Tim Burton. There is a exhibition about to start about the art of Tim Burton, which will have an accompanying book. Mm-hmm. And they've dug up all these old archival pictures and stuff for this book of art and for the exhibition and so forth. And some of the stuff that actually cropped up is some previously unreleased pictures from the pre-production of Superman Lives, when he was working on Superman. And so I thought I'd just share some of these. Some of these, a lot of the geeks will have already seen. But this is actually, this is supposed to be Brainiac. Now, remember, this is his conceptual art, okay? So this is Brainiac. Okay.
All right. You know, it looks exactly like James Marsden. It totally does. I can see that.
This is another picture from Superman Lives that we have no idea what the fuck it is. So it's
that's his nemesis, the kryptonite vagina, quite obviously.
I don't know, it's some big blob of green with teeth, but this is
I still go geek on that and say that they're trying to do like an evil version of that guy from like Star Trek 4 or whatever. It was the one that was like God, and it was like the blue face.
What would God need like with that. A starship? Yeah. And then this came up. Now this was kicking around for a while. This is some conceptual art for the design of Superman. Now, this is from the era of the Doomsday when he died and came back. And this is what they wanted Superman to look like. So this was going to be the return of...
Does it come in black?
So it's kind of, you know, the darker, more evil-looking Superman. But the gold photo, the picture that we have been building up to here...
Lois Lane naked?
This is a early costume fitting of Nicolas Cage as Superman. Oh! And here is the man himself. I am Kal-El.
Paul, how can I be in Ghost Rider? Look at this outfit. I am Jor-El, and my son is Kal-El. What was I thinking? Maybe I was on heroin. Fucking my God.
Sorry,
I've seen that picture before, but Jesus Christ, that is so good. He looks so uninterested. I think that's what really gets me. I
like the face is just like this. It's like...
It's obviously, he took a day off working on Con Air at the time, because he was wearing a Con Air. So he's got the long Con Air hair, and he's even got the necklace still on, but they've just whacked this rubber suit on him. And Brad, Movie Fan House, basically said, no way, priceless. I'm going to whack that photo up on Geek Actually this afternoon. So
no,
people,
the site will just purge it and die.
I have to put that photo up on Geek Actually so that people can actually catch that. I'll also try and embed Percy Jackson so that you guys can watch it for the audio listeners. And we'll try and embed this one too, but I actually suspect that this will be gone by this afternoon.
Yes, me too, because it only got up last night.
Yeah, now Dave found this and sent me an email through urgently, so this is a late addition to the show. This is another trailer. Now, this is the trailer for Sylvester Stallone's new film, The Expendables.
I haven't seen this
yet. Now, it actually doesn't look like it's finished, because the ending of it, the credits look like they've just been tacked on to the end.
From what I understand, this is a leaked trailer.
Yeah,
so this is why it wasn't meant to go out.
This is why I think that if I embed it on Geek actually this afternoon, that it probably won't be there by this evening. So we may not. But if, for those who are listening to the audio podcast, you can go back and watch a replay of this show at geekactually.com/live, and you can see this trailer if you're interested. I suspect if this trailer has leaked in this form, it's probably going to be released in the next couple of weeks anyway.
Yeah.
So here it is. This is The Expendables.
We kill them, we will kill them. Drop your guns.
Not chance.
Why do they always say that?
We kill them all. I don't care.
What's that?
In a text.
Excuse me.
Well, I got three pieces of work. Two a walk in a park, and one to hell and back.
The target of this island is a guy named General Garza.
They've got a small army. What do we got? 4.5 men.
Not so funny. Is this a contact? The rest you saw, how am I?
You want to be focused?
No, we have a dying place, but it's not dead.
You can help, Delena.
What's the plan?
There's a plan.
Are you out of your mind? You don't owe that woman nothing.
Look at this.
That's not easy being your friend.
It's true.
We got a company.
Everything is under control except one detail.
Come on!
I would have won.
I know you would have won.
Are you crazy?
You're welcome.
You know, the enemy's always been terrified of noise.
Lights out!
Damn, that thing's loud!
Back! Shit's getting old!
How did two obvious professionals pass right through security?
There used to be one of them.
Bring it, Happy Feet!
Again, the man's name.
You are done here.
I own you.
Who sent you?
Your hairdresser.
We will kill this American disease.
What's he saying?
He's saying we're dead with an accent.
Who can hurt you? Who can hurt you?
I don't care what anybody says, that is fucking awesome.
Oh, dude.
The first bit, I admit, that first bit where they were doing the talking and the back and forth, that was really stupid. But the rest of that trailer is just exactly... That is just...
It's an 80s action movie done now. It's going to be stupid dialogue. I mean, look, this has been on my radar for a long time now, but I mean, you've got what? One side, you've got Stallone, Statham, Jet Li, Terry Crews, who I fucking love Terry Crews. He was doing his best Jesse the Body impersonation.
Lundgren doesn't get his name in the credit at the end because Dolph Lundgren's in there as well.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of apparently people like that show up as cameos.
No, from what I know, Dolph Lundgren actually has a fairly substantial part.
Bruce Willis is meant to be in it for a little bit.
So Schwarzenegger.
Too. Yeah. But
Schwarzenegger is actually playing the governor of California.
Oh, what a stretch for me. I'm playing this role. I think it's going to be absolutely...
Really?
Come on, do it. I'm right here. Come on. sorry. I
got to say, that's a better impersonation than the impersonator in 2012. But we'll come back to that.
I'm just waiting to push through to this now. Every time we mention anything about 2012, I'm like, oh, I just want to go right now.
We're almost there, Josh. We're almost there.
It's going to be hilarious. I think it's going to be huge. I mean, you're going up against Eric Roberts and Angel Batista, no relation, from Dexter, who is in a huge stretch playing a Spick warlord, which should be very interesting.
Look, I watched that trailer this morning. I saw it a couple times while I was getting it ready for the show, and I just watched it again now. I look at it and go, it looks like big, dumb fun.
Which is what we need.
Absolutely. Exactly. I'm one of the few people who thought Rambo 4 was kind of fun. It's stupid, but it's fun. Mm. You know, for me, quite frankly, Rambo 3 is actually on my list of gloriously wonderful bad films. it made the list for one reason. I got to tell you, it made the list for one reason, which is that one scene where him and Troutman are on top of the hill. They get to the top of the hill, and the entire Russian army is in front of them. And Troutman goes, "What are we going to do, Johnny?" And he goes, "Fuck them."
The moment I'm waiting for in this movie is that you've got Stone Cold Steve Austin on one team, yes, and you've got Randy Couture on the other. Now, I'm looking forward to some sort of crossover where the two Stone Cold runs in, gives him a stutter, Randy Couture gives him an uppercut.
I'm just waiting for him to be lying on the ground like this, going like this, in that really, really bad kind of...
And quite frankly, Stallone has a goatee in this one, so it must be quality.
Absolutely.
Anytime somebody wears a goatee, it's quality. Plus, it's got Statham in it with his actual fucking accent.
And not afraid to show the sweat in his armpits. Did you notice that?
Yes, and Jet Li making fun of his horrible English-speaking ability.
I loved every little comedy moment in that, even the text moment. Like, as stupid as it is, like, it's one of those unfortunate nowadays truths where shit like that really does happen. I have had a text in the middle of one of the most intense conversations of my life with a bunch of people that were trying to fight me, and no one heard it like they did in that bit, but it was just this I'm like, you know, if I wasn't so tense right now, this would be really funny.
I gotta say that there was an article in Empire magazine that described Statham when they were talking about this film, and they were describing each of the characters, and they said, and Jason Statham was a voice so gravelly it feels like your driveway is coming up to punch you.
That is awesome. And the show is over. We're ending it on that note.
I just thought that was a wonderful quote. You know what, guys? It's that time.
Yeah, I think it's that time.
It's the moment that Brad and Charlie have been waiting for. Ooh,
it is that time. Here is the trailer, and then we will talk about 2012.
Suicide adhere to the Mayan calendar, which predicts the end of time to occur on the 21st of December of this year. This year. This year.
What are the odds?
Government is building these ships. So when do we let the people know?
Our mission is to assure the continuity of our species.
Wasn't it also decided the people have the right to fight for their lives?
all stay together.
No matter what happens, this film will be a piece of shit.
2012.
Okay. I think we don't need all this junk at the end. Okay, so 2012 is the latest film by Roland Emmerich. Now, we're going to combine this review with a little bit of a retrospective on Roland Emmerich. Instead of doing a retro review, we're just going to kind of...
Yeah, we can probably run that in first.
Yeah, we're going to kind of build up to this, because Roland Emmerich is one of those filmmakers who I find incredibly frustrating at the moment, because he actually started out with some promise, you know, and we look at it and we go, his early films, Stargate and Moon 44. And Moon 44 is really low budget, but it showed a lot of promise. It was a straight-to-video release.
You had me at Stargate.
Stargate, I absolutely loved. I never got into the series. I'm sorry, Dave.
Shut up.
But I love the film. I love the extended cut of the film. I think it's a really, really good version. I really, really, really enjoyed Independence Day, which is junk, but it was so much fun.
Come on, man. Blacks and Jews saving the world.
Now, what's really interesting is, and I think we can actually see, they're destroying laptops over there. I think we can actually see a pattern here, because Roland Emmerich hooked up with an American actor named Dean Devlin. And I actually have photos of these people. I forgot. So where are we? Here's Dean Devlin. You may recognize his face. When he was younger, he was actually in a lot of films. He now actually produces and sometimes directs. And this is Roland Emmerich, for those who don't know what he looks like. Now, they hooked up early on, and they produced, well, Dean Devlin was his producer, they co-wrote together, and Roland Emmerich directed. And together, as a team, the Emmerich-Devlin team created Moon 44, Stargate, Independence Day, Godzilla, and...
and that's where it all went to shit.
Well, no, because I'm going to defend Godzilla. I actually thought Godzilla was kind of fun. It's stupid popcorn fare, but it was kind of fun.
I think Godzilla, they should do a remake with all of Godzilla on roller skates, and then King Kong ice skating on the ice, and they could do little...
And you know what?
Together.
The entire time that that's happening, while they're doing pirouettes and stuff like that, the ground can be slowly
caving away.
But only caving away at that time where it stays like about half a meter behind them.
And only when they have a queue line, like, nothing will split us up.
Exactly.
We'll come back to that, though.
we're struggling here, aren't we? We're trying to stay.
Anyway, the last film that Devlin and Emmerich made together was the Mel Gibson film, The Patriot.
Yeah,
the Independence film. Now, which I thought was a relatively decent film, and I quite liked it. And we've got Thanksgiving coming up, so we should talk about that. But anyway, apparently there was a falling out between these two. You're not on camera, dude.
I don't care.
There you go.
God bless you.
Anyway, so they had a falling out, apparently. Centropolis was their company. They had a bit of a falling out, and they basically split and went their own directions. Dean Devlin, since that period of time, has done a lot of television work in particular. I don't know if you guys saw the absolutely atrocious telemovies, The Librarian series, with Noah Weil.
Is that that's a sequel, isn't it? Conan the Librarian?
This is basically the movies The Librarian were about that secret library where they go and collect artifacts. So it's kind of slash Raiders Lost Ark slash, you know, what have you. And it's Noah Weil from ER.
That was it, yeah. It looked like a Alan Quatermain, Solomon's Mine.
And it had Bob Newhart being the librarian guy. And it was all very kind of weak. But Dean Devlin has redeemed himself a little bit, because he produces a TV series at the moment called Leverage, which I really enjoy. Anyway, so that's Dean Devlin. On the flip side of the coin, Roland Emmerich went off on his own, and his first film out of this little merger was The Day After Tomorrow.
Which is not bad.
And I actually thought, okay, he can actually work on his own without Dean Devlin, and this is going to work. Then he made 10,000 BC. Now, 10,000 BC is awful. It's just awful. In fact, I have to say, though, that it is awful in that special kind of way that you kind of want to watch it, because it makes you laugh. Even my very analytical, scientifically minded, lovely wife, Katie, I put it on and said, you should watch this. And she goes, I don't want to see this. And I said, no, just have a look at it, because it is so stupid. This will make you laugh. She ended up staying with it for the entire film. And all the way through, she's going, oh, yeah, because that would happen. You know? So things like, you know, walking out of the tropical rainforest into the blizzard, you know, and stuff like that. And you go,
totally makes sense. It happened on the way here.
So anyway, and then being attacked by the giant turkey. Oh, there's a Thanksgiving reference again. Being attacked by the giant turkey in the woods. You know, It was an awful film that didn't make any sense, and all I kept thinking was that Alexei Sale quote, didn't you see my brother? Because all the way through it, everybody's saying, oh, I knew your father.
What's that, Snake Plissken? I thought you were dead.
So that brings us to 2012. And 2012, I have to say, I'm going to not say too much because I know you guys are biting at the bit as well, but all I can say is that 2012 is basically a film that is about the end of the world. The concept is some shaky bullshit science about neutrinos turning into microwaves and heating up the Earth's core, which then turns the core.
I think it was actually midichlorians.
And midichlorians that loosen the core.
It sounded like that when they were saying it. I was like, wow, so the force came down.
And all the plates basically start to move and the crust of the Earth can move, apparently, thousands of kilometers and not make everybody fall over.
Yeah, like that. The plates just shifted.
It's all just shifted. Anyway, so the science is, forget shaky, the science is non-existence. Roland Emmerich has a bug up his butt, basically, about these conspiracies. This is what Day After Tomorrow was all about, was the idea of the superstorms. Now he's hooked onto the Mayans. Look, let's face it. The Mayans predicted the end of the world in 2012 because they didn't bother to make their calendars go any further. It wasn't that they were saying the world was going to end. They were saying, oh, man, I'm tired of writing. It's going to be a while till we get there. Yes.
Yeah, we can finish this in like a year's time. We'll be fine. Nothing's going to happen.
We'll finish it later.
It's like the one mind scribe who's doing all the fortune telling. He's like, you know what? Fuck this shit. I'm out. That's it. I'm going to get some sacrifice of virgin and I'll come back to it later.
2012, past my lifetime, man. So anyway, so I don't, you know, I think the whole thing is just nonsense. Now, with that being said, the cast sleepwalk their way through this film. The cast sleepwalk their way through this film. The script is non-existent. And I got to say, I'm actually a fan of a couple of the actors in this film. I like, and I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce his name, but the black actor who is the scientist in the lead, who was in Serenity.
He was the bounty hunter at the end of Firefly.
Was
it Firefly?
No. He was the bounty hunter in the movie Serenity. He was in Red Belt, the David Mamet film. I like him as an actor. I love John Cusack normally. I like him as an actor.
I wouldn't go that far. I think Cusack's had pretty bad roles.
Oh, I think Cusack's done some great stuff, though.
Oh, dude, he has. Gross Point Blank, High Fidelity.
High Fidelity was shit, but he hasn't done...
I love High Fidelity.
He hasn't done... fuck off. He hasn't done anything decent since Gross Point Blank, where he was teamed up with the awesomeness of Piven. And that was pretty much it.
Now, I also have to say that Amanda Peet is an actress who I never really thought much of. And then
breasts are beautiful. Well,
they are, but as an actress, I thought, let's keep it as an actress for the moment.
Oh, okay, sorry, I didn't realize.
I actually didn't think much of her as an actress during the days of things like The Whole Nine Yards and stuff like that. Then she starred in Aaron Sorkin's TV series Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
Which was awesome,
and she was brilliant in it, and she did such a good job, and I thought, wow, I didn't know you had that in you. And obviously she didn't, because she doesn't have it anymore, because she's also really ordinary in this film.
Plus they made her out like a soccer mom and everything, and it's like she's still young and hot. You stick her in a bikini and have her running around in a fucking
miniskirt. I don't know if we need to go the bikini route.
I think we do.
But anyway, I thought that Oliver Platt, who I once again love as an actor, but I got to tell you, Oliver Platt has played the same character in the last 10 films or something like that. I think he's jumped
the last movie that I really remember loving him in was Executive Decision.
Oh, God, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, I know. That was, like, the last time I liked Oliver Platt. Like, I think he's really cool.
I quite liked him in that same time period. I liked him in Lake Placid as well.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right.
So I liked him in Lake Placid. And I also really liked him in West Wing.
I liked him in Striking Distance.
Oh, we're going further back.
Wow, we're going back.
As I say, so his last decade, he's been in the wilderness, and this film isn't going to save him, because he's playing a character as well. Overall, I'm going to say that... that Dave actually said informed us last week about being mugged. Okay, yes, last night I was assaulted. Okay, and it's going to take me a long time to recover.
I don't think you were assaulted. I think you were raped.
No, it was a visual.
It was an assault.
It wasn't rape because you paid for it, and two, you went into it knowing what was going to happen.
Look, so I did. You know what? I was expecting a stupid Roland Emmerich disaster film. thin on plot, thin on characters, but it was going to be a ride, okay? Yeah. And what I said to Josh was, for the first hour, I was kind of getting that.
I unfortunately don't sit with you on that one, Dave, unfortunately. Take it because away. During that first bit when, an example, like Independence
Sorry,
Day...
Sorry, let me just interrupt. This is like all spoilers, so we're just running into the whole film.
We're going to open
so,
spoilers up right from the beginning.
It's the end of a world
because
film.
Because
so,
let's face it, there is no... I'm going to say right off the bat that I actually say to you, do not see this movie. And because I'm going to say do not see this movie, we're going to spoil it straight off the bat.
Oh, I wasn't even hitting into spoilers. I was actually going to stay relevant. All right, well, look, anyway, at one stage... Well, basically, when shit hits the fan, the main characters go through this... stupidly obvious ride-style situation where they go from plane to car to so on. And every time they're in any sort of vehicle, the world just seems to be 2 meters behind them. It's always 2 meters. As they drive, it's just like the world goes, so you're going that fast, right? I'll just go 2 meters behind you and just match that pace. Like, it's ridiculous. The shit that came out, I was like, this would be fun as 2012 The Ride. You know, like, this belongs in, like, Universal Studios or something with you sitting in the car as it does that trip.
Pirates of 2012.
Exactly. Like, I mean...
It'll be out next week.
Exactly. It had no feeling like... For me, it was obvious they were going to get away. You know, like, there are ways to do those scenes in ways that you're like, oh my god, they might get hit, or, like, the side door comes off a car because something hits them or something like that. The car was obviously invincible, or the plane, or whatever vehicle they were in. You knew nothing was going to happen.
Well, it was obviously a CG cartoon in places
as
well. Oh, my
God. The CG was awful.
With everything that you've
Oh, here we go.
Here we go.
Now, don't get me wrong. This was a piece of shit. there's no... I'm not going to pull any punches. I remember walking out going, never before have such awesome special effects and shit acting been paired together. It was terrible. But I have to admit, the opening scene where California just gets wiped off the fucking map. Okay, look, you have to suspend obvious disbelief. And it is ridiculous and stupid.
I agree with you.
But I thought it was amazingly shot. It reminded me a lot. I know it's not the best comparison, but it was one of the things that I thought that Nicolas Cage film Knowing did. Where they actually showed people dying.
I preferred Knowing.
It showed people, you know, like when the planes crashed, people were on fire and stuff like that. You actually saw people getting taken out, falling off bridges and their cars getting wiped out, which for me it was intriguing because, you know, they've got to up the ante every time. Mm. This is the way that they do it. I thought the acting was atrocious. Woody Harrelson's character as the conspiracy nut was just fucking played out and stupid. The kids, I wish they all died. They had a horrible... worst Russian accents you've ever heard in your life.
All the accents, though, because even the world leaders from the other countries, the accents, it's like they didn't have a voice coach at all.
I mean, any Russian guy is just like, yes, I must talk to you here because I'm a Russian man and I must enunciate like this. So, you know, it was just bullshit. And I have to get this out off my chest. Roland Emmerich has a weird fetish with dogs. I don't know what the fuck is going on with him, but Independence Day, there's the, you know, everything's exploding down the tunnel. Vivica Fox is there. I was praying that she would be saved because she's a hot black stripper. And then she's like, and she's got her kid and the dog's running. She's like, come on, boy, come on. Well, no, we'll die. We'll leave the door open and die. We'll wait for the dog to jump through. And then in 2012, the whole fucking arc that they're trying to get onto to save themselves is going to, you know... sink, and it's like you're waiting for a little schnauzer, little Pekingese fucking pomegranate, little tiny thing to run along a little plankway to get in. I was like, seriously, dude, come on. Is it him or is it some executive who sits there and goes, dog in it.
I'm going to throw this into the chat room. I think it is fair to say that this is actually a very American thing.
I didn't see one flag, though.
It's
a
very American.
Disappointed.
No, yeah, I saw a flag. There was a flag on top of the RV.
On top
of Woody Harrelson's RV. Now, I would actually say that's actually a very American thing. This whole thing about the American, not American as a people, but America as film producers at the moment, they have this obsession with children and animals. we've lost the day of the 70s. We lost the days of Assault on Precinct 13, where John Carpenter had the little girl walk up to the ice cream truck and say, sir, can I have an ice cream cone? And he pulls out a pistol and shoots her in the chest, you know? And
sounds awesome.
Have you never seen Assault on Precinct 13?
No.
Brilliant film. Forget the remake. We've lost that ability. In this, I knew, I had absolutely no doubt in my mind that the two Russian kids were never in jeopardy. They were going to get saved.
Yeah, Oompa Loompas. Why put Oompa Loompas in the middle of the goddamn
but they were never in jeopardy. They were going to be saved. And I knew the dog was going to be saved. Never going to be in jeopardy. Because for some reason, in these big American blockbuster films, we can't ever have children or animals in jeopardy.
Mm.
And so you know right from the bat that they're going to be fine. Okay? I was never, ever once in this film feeling like John Cusack was going to die. If this was the 70s, anybody who's seen the film Earthquake, spoilers for a film that's almost 30 years old, but if you have seen the film Earthquake, Charlton Heston dives back into the water at the end to try and save his wife and drowns. All right?
Just like real life.
Just like real life, you know? And it's this nihilistic, dark ending. John Cusack should have died saving the ship.
That honestly wouldn't have helped that movie at all.
What I hated was that Oliver Platt was like this self-serving prick throughout the entire movie,
and he never got his comeuppance.
And then right at the end, the second that like Cusack risks his life, everyone's all of a sudden like, "Yes, God bless you, you hero," and it's like, what the fuck? Like, everything just changed. You've been a cunt for the entire movie, and now, you know, in the last minute, all of a sudden, and there was no revelation or anything. It's just like, good show.
And let's speak of John Cusack saving the ship. First of all, what kind of design flaw is this in this arc that is going to save humanity?
Also, I think we should probably just set it up. The world's fucked, basically. The waters are rising, and basically all world leaders have met and have gotten the Chinese, because they make everything very well and quickly. They got the Chinese to make a bunch of arcs that I think, what was it, like a couple of 100,000 people could actually fit into.
Because they built staterooms rather than bunks. Yeah, it was...
Excuse me, am I with the plebs? I don't particularly want to be saved on this earth if I have to be with the common folk.
But because they relied on the Chinese manufacturing, what they got was a ship that if the door wasn't closed, you couldn't start the engine.
It was a shoddy knockoff. I mean, it's an
interesting design feature. It's like we can't turn the engines on if the door's open. Why? Like, there is nothing with hydraulics that would stop you from being able to move. And what would happen if you need to move that, move the ship while opening the back door? Say, well, backing towards, you know, not, I don't know, a landmass you're planning to land on?
Well, you're not allowed
on?
To, obviously.
Yeah.
Because something gets jammed in the hydraulics and the door won't close. So, of course, the ship can't start its engines and starts drifting. And of course, the other thing that I pointed out to Josh was, you're going to build the arcs that are going to save humanity. Mm. So you build them in the rockiest mountains that you can find. That way, they've got lots of obstacles to hit on the way out the door. You don't build them in, like, the Sahara Desert that's flat, you know?
Oh, no, absolutely. And the other thing I love is Charlie's brought up a really interesting... And the further point, sorry, on that I loved was the idea that we had to build it in these mountains because, you know, like, when the water hits, it would be too powerful if we put them low down on land. You know, we wanted to put them high so that when they hit, it wouldn't be as powerful because we're at the top of the mountains. Why don't you build submarines? Okay? They don't have to stay submarines, but why the hell can't you just have it so that these ships can have a little bit of air support so that when the water hits, we wait for that and then surface?
Yes.
They don't need to be ships.
That's
but anyway.
Crazy talk. You
That's
can
crazy
just,
talk.
I can just bet that okay. Roland Emmerich is watching this podcast right now and he's like, fuck!
That's so fucking good.
Fuck, I could have done that.
Now, the other thing I want to say about the hydraulic system was, I love the fact that they're actually watching all of the events that are taking place on the security cameras, and there happens to be a security camera mounted in the cogwheels because it's actually dead on John Cusack's face. So why did we have a camera in the gears?
Dude, the tech side of things like this is absolutely terrible. The one that I loved and the one that Charlie's also brought up in the chat room here is the fact that they say all ground communication has been lost, and then the guy calls the other friend on a cell phone and you're like, wait, what?
Well, it wasn't all ground communication lost.
It was obviously that ground communication was with Verizon, and the other guy was on AT&T. It's like, that should be the new ad. It's like, world ending? AT&T.
We have more 3G coverage.
No, but the other point, which I was talking to Dave about, and look, I mean, this is a personal thing, and I don't expect everyone to sit with me on this.
I totally disagree.
But the interesting fact that I had was it was really interesting the way that Emmerich has finished up this film about the whole, if we don't, you know, save these people, we don't risk humanity. Number one, we've already established that probably 90% of those people have paid for their spot on the thing. So we're not talking about the cream of humanity. We're talking about the rich of humanity. Second of all, anyone that knows anything about arcs or vaults or like any long-term spacecraft or anything like this, anyone that's seen Battlestar before knows that these ships were made to carry that sort of people and the animals that are on board, right? Jumping the amount of people that they have on is not going to save humanity. It's going to kill humanity. Mm-hmm. We did not know that Africa was going to be there at the end of it. We did not know that there were going to be land masses and all this sort of stuff. That was a risk they took. And in all honesty, I think that that was the stupidest thing. You have the world leaders, right, of this world, of the current generation of people. You have the leaders that are all in these ships. They're sitting there. They have all these people. Yes, they are under, you know, sort of the amount of people they probably could have had. But you are creating a vehicle to save the world. You are saving people as a species, right? And then you're going to go ahead after, you know, calculating food for these people for a certain period of time and animals, which you're going to need to feed, which will have ridiculous food amounts as well.
The animals were the food.
Well, they probably would end up like that. And then you're going to go, you know what, let's just load on probably 500,000 people extra. You know, this
cannibalism,
is not...
man.
Exactly, but this is ridiculous. Like, I mean, Emmerich is trying to create that feel-good moment, and then in the end he, you know, sort of like wins out because he created the storyline where apparently the whole of Africa didn't go underwater.
Well, it's interesting you say he created the storyline, because I'd like to point out that the film is virtually the same story concept as the film Deep Impact by Mimi Leder, which came out several years ago.
Wasn't that a porno?
About the comet that's going to collide with, which was competing with Armageddon.
Yes.
And it's a far better film. I mean, Deep Impact, I really...
Hush your mouth.
I thought Deep Impact was
actually...
Don't
want to close
and
my eyes.
Ironically, we have Morgan Freeman as the president in Deep Impact, and we have Danny Glover in this one as the president. And as Josh said, why was he cast as the president? Because he was black.
Well,
was it me or am I right in saying that Danny Glover was talking like he'd had a minor stroke?
Yeah.
What was wrong with him?
Look, what pissed me off the most was is like, okay, I can see that they're trying to do like a homage to Obama or whatever. Well, it's like a black guy and his president. That'll keep them people happy and all that. And it's just like he's running around. I think you may find it in the director's cut. I think Roland Emmerich just put that in.
What was that?
So that's called a car. There's these things called cars. They're vehicle.
I thought Josh has got his PSP here. I thought maybe his PSP was making
noise. No.
But I was waiting for Danny Glover, and I'll see. I'm telling you, it'll be in the special features. So I'll just be like, this planet was 3 days to retirement. I'm too old for this shit. You know, because
I like Charlie's comment. Don't fuck with Danny Glover. He killed a predator. That's true.
Hey, pussy face.
All right, look, I think we can pretty much wrap this up. We can say that the film is terrible, and I will sum it up by saying that it has been a long time, if ever, that I have been in a cinema where the audience literally was trying to flee at the end of this film. They were getting up and leaving before the credits.
See, I disagree, because I think that on Blu-ray, when this comes out, it's going to be an awesome film to sit visually and watch on Blu-ray with a friend and
what,
just
the four
tear
scenes
strips
that have action?
Off it.
I don't think I can sit through it again.
Yeah, no.
I went with Suze and we were just giggling like Japanese schoolgirls throughout the entire movie.
We
were getting shushed like 50 times.
Josh actually leans to me and goes, when the credits start rolling, we should get out really fast because we've been talking the entire movie.
I don't know. Like, I mean, Dave, I have to say that I don't agree, because the whole thing is, yes, there are some brilliant visual scenes. I'm actually going to go out and say I don't agree with you that they were that great. Like, as a visual person, Titanic had better CG than that did. Like, the people looked realistic. The people that were falling out of that building.
Open my wrist.
Yeah, okay, fine. Not storyline related, but we're talking about 3D now. Those people falling out the building looked like they had round heads and round hands. Like they
were, but let's not forget, you chose a bad example, because let's not forget that really stupid little animated person walking along the deck of the Titanic in that one sweeping shot.
I'm just saying that...
I blanked it out of my memory.
I'm just saying, in a world that we have that much money... And you know what? Sorry, this is another thing I wanted to bring back. For a movie with such a high budget... The scenes in the houses or in the shopping malls or in the car parks were so bad. Like, well, anything was actually, that wasn't CG.
This was actually a point that I said to Josh last night when we came out of the movie. It feels to me, it was bizarre because it felt to me like half of the film, once again, the inside stuff or the close-up stuff or the intimate stuff when he's down at the crankshafts and stuff, looks like it's shot on video.
But it was horrible.
There was this really crisp film photography outdoors and the chases and stuff. And then we come to these other moments and you go, why does it look like video all of a sudden? Why does it look like high def?
What I loved was the depth of the relationship between the characters, as Cusack being divorced from Amanda Pete and she's got a new man and the kids and the sons idolizing the stepfather. And like all of that, I was like, fine. And then when the stepfather dies, it's like 3 seconds of mourning for everyone. It's like, okay, let's move on. We got our lead actor in with the chick. Kid, give your dad a hug. We're done. Put a bow on this puppy. And it was just... Do you know what I mean? It was like a fucking Astro Boy. And there was thing. Nothing.
There was no emotion at all about...
Had no connection with any of the characters. Yeah. One thing that we kept bringing up was the ridiculous amount of added-in characters as you went throughout the film. Just like every 5 minutes, we're either adding in a new character or adding in a further storyline for a character that's already there.
Roland Emmerich was like an hour into the film, he goes, you know what? It's slowing down. Let's add some new characters.
No, I think it's more, shit, they might be concentrating on the plot. Throw something else in. Oh, shiny. What's this over here?
I loved the characters that would get these longer plots where it'd be like, you remember back in that such and such when we did this? And I'm like, I don't care about this person. Don't tell me more about him. Just kill him.
And the last thing I'm going to say on this, and then I'm up because this film doesn't deserve this much talking, but the last thing I'm going to say is, why the fuck did the last 25 minutes of this film look like Star Trek? They walk onto the bridge, the uniforms that they're wearing on the arcs. It's like, wouldn't they just be wearing military uniforms, you would think? But no, they've got these special, like, Starfleet suits, and they've got the Starfleet bridge, you know? And it's like, we sit there and go, this is what I was saying that I agreed with you, Dave. I actually, the first hour of this film, I was there. I was with the film. It was a theme park ride.
Yeah.
You don't think about the plot. You go, it's a Roland Emmerich film. The dialogue is going to be bad. It's going to be, you know, flag waving American, all the Woody Harrelson stuff, all that. So, you know, all that first hour, and then the sinking of LA, and you know the plates, you know, and the plane flying through it. All that I'm fine with. You know, yes, there was some bad CG, but there was also some staggering CG moments. Those two buildings collapsing in on each other and the plane going between them was awesome. Just magnificent.
Yeah, no,
you know,
no. There was
you know, and also, that's fine. The problem was that Roland Emmerich kind of got to the first hour point and then said, you know what? This film's kind of boring me now. Let's start another one.
Yeah,
and then he got about an hour into that and goes, this film was the longest goddamn movie in history.
Yeah, I know. It felt like it was four films connected together and shoved into one big mess. I will say one thing. I'll take back what I said about the CG, because the bit with the volcano was pretty staggering.
Yeah, like and the freeway collapsing when they're driving.
The freeway was awesome.
Forget the car. I thought the car actually looked pretty horrible.
The car
screaming along, and that freeway coming down in sections along beside them, and the car spilling over onto the road. That was really well done.
It was some of the
know?
Most amazing sequences I've ever seen. And, I mean, unintentionally funny from horrid acting. I mean, like, I'll be honest, I haven't laughed this hard since Final Destination 3D. Like, it was hilarious. I'm looking forward to laughing this much next week when we do.
Oh man,
Gay Moon.
New Moon's going to be a whole new.
That's going to be a whole new level of bad.
I think it's actually called Twilight Being Bummed by Big Gay Werewolves.
Yeah,
I believe
all
that
right.
is.
We'll save that for next week. We're going to finish this up because it's goddamn hot in this studio.
Yeah.
So,
and I would just like to bring up one last thing. This is my final words for the movie.
Sure.
It's interesting that Charlie actually just called me out just before and said, you're thinking far too much about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to understand the only reason I thought so much about this movie was I was given so much time to think about this movie.
Absolutely.
This is not an Emmerich film.
Night?
Like, The Emmerich film that we have in a standard film, right, is the kind of film where you can switch off and disconnect because what you're seeing on screen is great popcorn entertainment. You're enjoying it the entire time you're watching it. This film did not have this.
And the difference is that Day After Tomorrow also has long dialogue passages.
But it works.
But it worked. And you actually believed the characters enough to stay with them.
Yeah.
And so all the scenes in the library where they're burning the books and all that sort of stuff and they're talking about the father coming and everything, I was there with them and I rolled along for the ride.
Yeah.
And I agreed with and I accepted everything that was going on. The problem with 2012 is if it's going to be a popcorn film that I can disengage my brain, don't keep insisting that I try and turn it back on again. And that was what they kept doing, is that they would stop the popcorn stuff. They would try and get into
the
pseudoscience
so
bullshit.
Quickly.
You never, and the fact that they would keep introducing new characters. So the idea, look, Roland Emmerich is making 1970s disaster movies.
Mm.
They have a very strict formula. Set everybody up in the first 20 minutes and then knock them all down for the next 2 hours, you know? Problem is, Roland Emmerich didn't follow that format in this. He was started to set people up, knocked a few down, set some more up, knocked them down, set a few more up, changed the plot, moved in a different direction, set up a few more characters, changed the plot again, take it to a different direction. That's not following the formula, and that's making me think too hard.
Yeah, exactly. And on the, even further than the actual thinking about it bit, the other thing that really annoyed me was how the scenes would switch. We'd have massive action and it would just cut to dialogue or cut to a science explanation. And it wouldn't change to it or sort of let you recover as a person. It would just drop you straight in the dialogue. So your heart's pounding. You've watched cars falling and hills exploding and the land ripping open. And then instantly you'd be asked to think. It was like it would just bludgeon you and it'd be like, boom, now think. Mm. And you'd just be like, oh, God, no.
No, look, as I say, I felt assaulted by this movie. I didn't enjoy the movie because of that. I wanted to enjoy the movie. I knew it was going to be bad, but I wanted to enjoy it, you know? Mm. I wanted to enjoy the ride. I wanted to just go, okay, it's Roland Emmerich, disengage my brain and have fun. And the problem was that I was just, it was like Roland Emmerich every half an hour or so slapped me in the face and said, wake up!
I don't know. I think
you're
I think you guys have you go into movies with way too high expectations. I mean, I walked in there and I was like,
critics.
I was like,
we
oh,
went
oh,
in.
So I'm not.
No, I'm not.
Shut up. I'm not finished.
I
went in knowing that it was going to be.
No. Actually, I disagree with both of you because I'm.
I didn't even make a point.
Because I know what you're going to say. I'm not actually, I'm going to say, first of all, to Josh, I am not a professional film critic.
I'm not saying professional at all.
No, what I'm saying is I'm a fan of movies, and as a fan of movies, I go into movies hoping to enjoy the film.
You
right?
See, that strategy is
no,
totally
I'm not,
wrong.
No, you need
to go in expecting a piece of shit,
no.
Because then anything that you get above
no,
a piece
no,
of
I,
shit
I,
is
disagree.
A bonus.
I want,
you're like, wow,
the
that
difference
was fantastic.
Is, I'm actually a very easy audience. I actually want to enjoy movies so much that I give a lot of leeway to a lot of movies. Problem is that when I go into a movie like 2012, I know what I'm going in to expect. I knew the film wasn't going to be a good film, Dave.
Yeah, exactly.
I've already read enough reviews on this film to know that this film was pretty low on the common denominator.
I just had to see Emmerich on it, and I was like, yeah, this is pretty
dude,
much...
Dude,
I went
in with 1 out of 5 out of expectations.
Josh actually
film.
Said to me at the beginning, he said, what are you expecting? I said, I'm expecting dumb fun
exactly.
with a stupid plot and bad characters.
Okay.
And I got that for the first hour.
Yeah.
And then it just degraded from there. And
exactly.
That's the problem.
As a perfect example, I can go into a film like I went into G.I. Joe, right? And we came out of that and we enjoyed the hell out
Joe,
of that
I
film.
Have to tell you now, G.I. Joe is probably the best action film I've seen in the last year.
Exactly.
Like,
and this is the whole
movie,
thing.
Man.
This
loved
is the whole thing. Me and Dave can go into a film like that and disengage our brain.
Yeah.
But you have to reward us.
And we said
with,
about G.I. Joe, we said this was a stupid movie. But it had some great moments in it.
Exactly,
you know?
And this is the thing. With something like this, it's got the stupidness which we expected, but it doesn't deliver as well. And it doesn't deliver on the front of what it should have done. It delivers
don't
in parts.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not excusing the film. I agree with you that the film is a piece of shit. I'm just saying that, you know, to me, it's like a hilarious...
And as an example, I'll give you an example. With the exception of Transformers 2... With the exception of that movie, I actually quite enjoy Michael Bay films, you know? I enjoy the big, dumb fun that is Michael Bay. I love, and I'm one of probably the only people in the entire world that actually didn't mind The Island, you know? And, you know...
I'm with you.
Oh, you're with me? All right, there you go.
I like the Scarlett Johansson.
I didn't mind The Island.
I
thought The Island had some awesome action sequences in it. It was kind of an interesting concept and so forth. I don't mind big, dumb fun, you know? And I loved Armageddon. I thought Armageddon was a hoot, you know? And I love, as I say, I liked Godzilla. I liked, you know, I liked Day After Tomorrow. I like Moon 44. I liked, you know, Independence Day. This film was not those films.
No, no, definitely. Look, I totally agree with you guys. I'm just saying that, you know, for me, it's like, I kind of knew, and maybe it's the company you go with as well as you go, like, I think you guys know, Suze and I, we tear strips off just about everything anywhere we go. So, I mean, we were seriously talking through the entire movie. Like, I feel sorry for anyone who was within 15 to 20 seats of us in any direction, because we were just laughing and, you know, just like, you'd just be sitting there watching something, you'd be like, ooh, and we'd look at each other, and then I'd be like, then the dialogue would come out or something. I'd be like, oh, what the fuck?
All right, I'm going to defend that statement. Brad from Movie Fan House has just said, I noticed he never brought up Pearl Harbor. I actually enjoyed Pearl Harbor too.
But
I'm going to put a caveat on that, and I'm going to say that if you take Pearl Harbor, cut the first hour 15 minutes off the film, and just watch from the bombing of Pearl Harbor onwards. That I quite enjoy.
I love that film because it's like, hey, we're America, we lost, but we won.
Well, they didn't lose. They lost that encounter.
Well, you know, it wasn't World War II, the film.
Absolutely.
It was Pearl Harbor, the film.
Popshot said, just watch Tora, Tora, Tora.
Damn, I agree with you.
Tora, Tora, yes. Tora is fucking awesome. And so is...
Tora, Tora, Tora. It sounds like a Jewish priest film.
And so is, really, if you haven't seen it, The Battle of Midway, which was also really good as well.
Haven't seen that.
So, yeah, no, there are other great films. But as I say, that, I got to say, the 45 minutes of the bombing of Pearl Harbor...
Oh, look, that was astounding.
Staggering. I mean, it is just staggering.
It's just the shit wrapped around it.
Yeah, well, look, and I don't know, it was because of the era of Titanic, they felt that they had to wrap this love story around this bombing moment. If they cut all that crap out of it and just stuck with a film like Tora, 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 you know, they would have been better off just remaking Tora, 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 but with that bombing scene.
You see, in the opposite, like, I have to admit, like, I watched Titanic once, and I was more interested in the story of the characters than the ship going under. I was like, I don't give a shit. It's sinking? Who gives a shit? Billy Zane, shoot that motherfucker. You know what I mean? I don't know. That's what I'm thinking.
We've got Brad and Charlie reciting the lyrics from America, Fuck Yeah, from Team America.
But I have to say to Brad, sorry, don't ever apologize for liking G.I. Joe.
No, absolutely.
There's nothing wrong with that, because you have, and I've said it to you before, Brad, you have two ninjas fighting at the same time as an underwater Star Wars battle going on, and two hot chicks duking it out on an elevator. You can't beat that, man. cannot beat that.
I think before we do our final sign-off here, I think we just need to bring up Nicolas Cage one more time, because...
I don't know if we can handle it.
No, okay, because I just... because I just, this photo is just wonderful.
I'm here to save the world. Again.
That's what I was waiting for.
All right. You just need to ask for it, and I'm more than happy to put on my Nicolas.
All right, so we're going to sign out of here, because I got to tell you, I think my brain and my computers are starting to melt. Yep. So we're going to say thank you very much for joining us. If you want to send feedback, you agree or disagree with any of our takes today, send the feedback to feedback@geekactually.com. If you are an iTunes subscriber and you haven't yet put some feedback on the show, please put some feedback on the show. It helps us go up the ranks, moves us through iTunes. We still have not had any UK feedback. I would really like some English people to jump in there.
We'll shine your boots, Governor, if you do it.
I don't think with that impersonation, I think we just lost all of our English listeners. All right, so if you want to find out more about about what we do at Geek Actually, or when shows are starting, what sort of news is happening, anything like that, follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/DavidMcVeigh. Dave Kozicki, where can people follow or find out more about you?
You can find my writings in official PlayStation Magazine on the Australian Penthouse website, and at my very rarely updated, which may be updated at some time soon, blog at feeltheawesome@blogspot.com.
Fantastic. And Josh Philpott, where can people find out more about you?
Well, obviously on platforms at 8 o'clock, we will be going out live. And, of course, we are, both me and Dave, the hosts of that show. And the thing switches up a bit, so find us there. And, of course, also facebook.com/geekjosh.
Fantastic. And you can also friend me on Facebook. That's facebook.com/DavidMcVeigh. Now, for those who are listening to the audio podcast, we'll just mention one more time that you can watch this show live. As of next week, the time is changing. It is actually going to be 12 p.m. on Saturdays rather than 11, so just shift 1 hour forward. And for our American listeners, that is 6 p.m. Pacific and 10 p.m. No, 9 p.m. 6 p.m., 9 p.m., whatever. You guys work it out. UTC plus 11 Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time is what we are on at this point in time. If you haven't downloaded or listened to last week's episode where we had the lovely Natalie Del Conte on the show, please go and grab that episode. It is actually fun to listen to her. Yeah. It's bad audio quality, but it was fun to listen to her thoughts on the great internet tech war. And hopefully we'll have her back on in December when Avatar comes out. So,
and I will be good so that she actually stays on the show.
That would be very nice. Thank you. Appreciate that. In the meantime, I want all of you... Oh, one last thing I forgot to mention. We put it on the website. You can actually go to geekactually.com and have a look. We were going to play it on the show, but we just got to get out of here. It's too hot. Mm. But you can go to the website and have a look at it. Nicholas the Little Geek McVeigh was accepted into the screenings of the Sydney Regional Film Festival and got a trophy and a certificate for getting screened. He was screened on the big screen at the Palace Cinemas in Leichhardt. It is all very exciting. You can see pictures on my Facebook and on the site about his certificate and his trophy. So, yes, his film was The Chicken Wing Stand, and we will probably play that on the show at some point. But in the meantime, if you want to go have a look at it, you can see it at geekactually.com. And from there, you can also link to his YouTube channel where you can see a lot of his other stuff. So in the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies. All of life's questions are answered in the movies, and we will see you more next week.
All of life's questions are answered in 2012. Go and see it.
Pretty much. I think they are, yeah. We'll be right back.